This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Thumbtack presents the ins and outs of caring for your home. Out. Uncertainty. Self-doubt. Stressing about not knowing where to start. In. Plans and guides that make it easy to get home projects done. Out. Word art. Sorry, live, laugh, lovers. In. Knowing what to do, when to do it, and who to hire. Start caring for your home with confidence. Download Thumbtack today.
What kind of programs does this school have? How are the test scores? How many kids do a classroom? Homes.com knows these are all things you ask when you're home shopping as a parent. That's why each listing on Homes.com includes extensive reports on local schools, including photos, parent reviews, test scores, student-teacher ratio, school rankings, and more. The information is from multiple trusted sources and curated by Homes.com's dedicated in-house research team. It's all so you can make the right decision for your family. Homes.com. We've done your homework.
We are off and rolling on a Monday. April 14, 2025 is the date. Welcome into the Gabe Kuhn Show. I am your host, former Memphis Tiger Gabe Kuhn on X at G_Kuhn71. I'm alongside the executive producer of the Gabe Kuhn Show. That'd be Connor Dunning on X at C99929. Connor, how was your weekend, brother?
It was great.
Good to hear.
An amazing weekend.
What'd you
Beautiful
do
weather.
If it was that great?
Dude, Porch Fest
okay,
on Saturday.
Nice.
Saw Speaker Girl, the best up-and-coming band in the city.
Yeah.
Bass guitar, Colin Dunning, little brother, crushing it.
You did show me a little preview. I hope I'm allowed to say that. You showed me a preview of songs they recorded. I was damn impressed, brother. So that was fun.
Yeah,
that
so we did Porch Fest all day on Saturday, and then yesterday went to Shelby Farms for a little bit. Got some work done at Otherlands. Just a great weekend.
So Porch Fest instead of Coachella going on right now.
Yeah, it was very Memphis weekend for me. Porch Fest, Shelby Farms, Otherlands.
I saw an interesting stat about Coachella, though, speaking of music festivals. 60% of the people that bought tickets to Coachella financed their tickets. How gross is that? That is one of the most disgusting stats I read over the weekend, including all the sports we watched.
Couldn't be me.
Rory McIlroy completes the Grand Slam.
Thank God.
Golf sixth Grand Slam of all time. We have Nico Amoliava to talk about. We have Grizzlies, NBA playoffs to talk about. But we have 3 hours to talk on the way, courtesy of 92.9 FM, ESPN, and yours truly. We're going to open on Rory and what he did and get to the NBA playoffs. But as far as guests are concerned, 5 o'clock, David Cobb will join from CBS Sports per normal every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday right here on 92.9 FM, ESPN. And he also joins for Jeffrey Wright & Company on Thursday as the company for Jeffrey Wright. And then 6 o'clock, we're going to bring on DeMichael Cole, who's boots on the ground in San Fran for tomorrow night's play-in game the Grizzlies have against the Golden State Warriors. A rematch of 2021 bubble play-in. I want to see the same results. I'm not very confident that we're going to see the same results. It was 117-112 then, but we're going to get the second iteration of it tomorrow night in that rivalry that the Golden State Warriors and the Grizzlies have with each other. But without further ado, I want to take you back to yesterday in the afternoon after a day full of golf, or on the first playoff hole in what turned out to be the only playoff hole for Rory versus Justin Rose, who were tied at 11 under after we finished the fourth round. Here's the sights, or at least not the sights. Here are the sounds from Rory McIlroy completing what he has been waiting to complete for the better part of a decade. A-plus, absolute A-plus call, A-plus celebration by Rory McIlroy, seeing the tears stream down his face, fell to his knees, leaned forward, almost full fetal position for Rory McIlroy. It's been a long time coming for that, and he's finally able to make it happen. He completes golf's 6th career Grand Slam, winning all of the 4 majors. He joins Gene Sarazen, Ben Hogan, Gary Player, Jack Nicklaus, and, of course, Tiger Woods. And with that, I don't think there's a doubt. There's a few things that I think Rory was able to accomplish. He to me, becomes the most decorated European player of all time. He certainly moves into the top 15, you could argue top 10 of all time, as far as a career is concerned. But I think more than anything, he finally proved to himself that he was going to be able to make this thing happen. He finally was able to do it, even after a tough end to a Friday round. I thought yesterday he played some of the most, you know, diabolical up and down golf I have ever seen. He had a 5-stroke lead at 14 under at one point, double bogeyed and, you know, brought it close. Justin Rose was able to handle business because on the 18th he missed like a 7-foot putt. But he also had some great shots in the playoff, on the playoff hole, the approach shot when the pressure was on him, because Justin Rose had a good approach shot as well. He was able to make that happen. The approach shot on 15 is like Tiger Woods when he was able to win in the early 2000s. You put those shots side by side, they look very similar. But it was up and down as hell. But I was glad that he was finally able to get that monkey off his back, because it feels like as people that take in golf as well as sports fans, it was a monkey off our back. So we can stop talking about it, stop discussing it. He finally has his Grand Slam. We can move on with our lives. That's how I felt down the stretch yesterday. I'm like, please let him win this so we can just stop having to discuss this every single year.
He feels like one of those rare athletes where nobody really dislikes him. So everybody was pulling for him because we understood the moment, we understood the history, we understood his history, his personal history with the Masters and just trying to complete this thing and how many times he's been close and then hasn't been able to get it done. And that's why when he missed that putt, all of us were like, oh my God, it was painful to watch because you could just see him panicking internally. And you're like, please, 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 golf gods, allow this guy to get this done so that we can all just have this big moment of relief, and we finally got it. The call was amazing. His reaction was incredible. I'm a huge fan of when announcers, when a moment like that happens, just let us hear the crowd, let us hear the reaction. That's why, like, a lot of people give Joe Buck a lot of crap. I love Joe Buck because he lets that happen so many times. He just has one line, and then he lets you hear the crowd. I think it's the best. It was a great Masters overall. An amazing finish to the Masters. I'm so happy that Rory won. I texted Jeffrey Wright immediately, and I was like, are you alive? And he was like, that was not fun.
Then I
was like, congratulations, Jeffrey. I'm very happy for you.
I saw a post on X pretty shortly thereafter.
Pop some champagne,
with him and his wife with some champagne saying, never a doubt.
I'm surprised he didn't wear a turtleneck into the offices, into the studios today. I thought he'd be Roryed out a little bit more than he was. No, I was very happy for him because we've just seen his journey for so long, and he is one of the good guys in sports. And like I said, I don't know if I've ever met a single human being that's like, you know who I hate? Rory McIlroy. I'd be like, what is wrong with you?
Right, but it was a long time coming. He finally got it done. But it was not without drama.
No.
The entire time. You thought Bryson was going to be in it, but he completely pissed down his leg down the stretch yesterday.
Speaking of Bryson, I heard that you called Bryson something interesting over the weekend from a source.
An anonymous I called Bryson
an anonymous
something.
Inside
oh,
source.
Wait, no, let's
over,
not do that. Let's not do
no,
that.
No, I think we need to do
this
that.
Was, this
I think
was,
I think Bryson was walking up and down the course, and maybe
you heard my wife texted you about
maybe
this.
Maybe beefcake.
Yeah, this was interesting. I had the wrong definition of beefcake in
what?
My mind. I did not know it meant what it meant.
What did
I was
you
just
think
thinking
beefcake
like,
meant?
I was just thinking like meathead. More meathead. Like that's a beefcake's a synonym to meathead. But why? This is my wife texting you about a mistake I made over the weekend. I'm the word guy.
A good broadcaster and insider doesn't reveal his sources. I don't know who you're talking about. Who's your wife? Never mind.
I said it to one person.
How do you know Myers didn't fire off a text?
That's a good point. Fair point.
Maybe he's a genius.
But yeah, I used the term beefcake, and I haven't lived that one down. Because apparently it means completely, it's something completely different.
That had to be a crazy thing for her to hear.
Yeah, it was.
If it was her.
It was weird for her to hear. If it was her.
If it was. Who knows?
Come on, man. But yeah, the fact that you're bringing this to air, that's depressing. I thought I was going to be able to avoid this, at least in the public eye.
You too, Brute.
Yeah, this is what I say things behind the scenes at my own home, and it gets out of my home. I think I need to have a discussion tonight. I need to have a family meeting with Myers and Taylor tonight.
It wasn't her.
Yeah, but I did use the term beefcake. I didn't realize it meant what it meant. I was thinking meathead. That's more of the...
That makes more sense.
Yeah.
Beefcake is hilarious, yes. Though.
Like, what's, but like, you knew the definition of beefcake to you was like good looking man, muscle bound.
Yes.
That's what you thought it was. I think it was that.
I think it's what everybody thinks
I
that
see,
is.
I see. That's crazy to me. I don't know. Maybe it's just me. It's a misunderstanding. It's a misunderstanding. I do not consider now that I know the definition. I will never make that mistake again. But Bryson did pee directly down his leg down the street.
He did. Yesterday. He absolutely did.
Corey Connors as well. There's a lot of guys that struggled. I did get a kick out of the fact, Sung J.M., did you see a single shot from him?
No.
Through the 4 days? He finished fifth. Like, how does that happen? And by the way, text from the wife, laughing emojis. So I think we know the source now. She didn't admit it straight up.
I have no idea what you're talking about.
All right. Now, moving on from that, and my hilarious misinterpretation of the word beefcake, we do have some news to talk about when it comes to the NBA postseason. The Grizzlies finished 4-2 in their last six, but that was not good enough to get themselves out of the eighth spot. They're going to be in the play-in tomorrow night in San Fran against the Warriors to lock in the seventh seed and match up with the Rockets. If they lose that, they will move into the eight seed game against the winner of the Sacramento Kings and the Dallas Mavericks. And if they win that game, they would lock in against the Oklahoma City Thunder. But, you know, the two games that really shifted the view of this and put them into the play-in, we talked about the Timberwolves game, but that Nuggets game, they had control.
Man.
For 3.5 of a quarter and just blew it down the stretch. And when you look at teams that are ranked ahead of them, and the Western Conference, the teams that they have played in 25 games, they are a 6-19 record in those games, and now they have to do that to play into the playoffs as well. It was frustrating to see how that game played out against the Nuggets on Saturday night, but hey, it is what it is.
It was infuriating watching that Nuggets game.
Friday night, I should say.
Yeah.
My bad.
I knew what you're talking about. It was infuriating watching that game because the execution down the stretch was just dreadful, and it has been something that has plagued this Grizzlies team for a few seasons now, where in late game situations, in games that are either playoff games or feel like playoff games or have playoff game implications, when the basketball game slows down and you have to execute in the half court, they just haven't been able to do it. They were firing up so many threes, and it was driving me crazy.
They stopped getting to the rim.
They stopped taking mid-range shots. They were taking terrible, settle threes. And in the entire game, it was interesting. I sent a text to a friend that said, this game reminds me of Florida-Houston, where it felt like the Houston was just hanging on for dear life, but you knew the entire time when you were watching it that there's no way they get it done. Somehow, some way, Florida's going to come back. They're executing better. They're playing harder. They're making their shots. And that's exactly what happened with the Memphis Grizzlies and the Denver Nuggets. It was demoralizing because they really did have it. They had such a big lead, and just little by little, you saw it get squandered away, and it felt inevitable. In the fourth quarter, it felt inevitable that the Denver Nuggets were going to take the lead.
They did such a good job for three quarters, in my opinion. And I know that the statistics were the statistics. He still had a triple-double. I thought they did a really good job for three quarters on Nikola Jokic, but the fourth quarter, the dam broke. They didn't have any answer, and I don't understand why they couldn't really get this under control. They didn't really have an answer for Russell Westbrook in this game. He was just getting down the court and to the rim at will, getting foul calls.
Aaron Gordon always seems to, he's
on the Grizzlies killer list. He had 33-5 in this game, 13-23 from the field. But like, I think the same issues that plagued them at the end of that game have plagued them since the trade deadline. They don't have anybody on the perimeter who can stay in front of their guy.
Yeah.
And you get a bunch of drives. Zach Edey and Jaren Jackson help, whether they're getting into foul trouble or there's just drop-off passes because they're helping. Aaron Gordon, some of those baseline cuts were just wide open because Zach Edey has to help off because the perimeter defender just got blown by. I mean, it's just pretty consistent at this point, and it just does not give you a whole lot of hope for this game tomorrow night against a Warriors team that can be good at doing that as well.
Well, it comes down to, and we have to be honest about what happened in that Nuggets game. Down the stretch, your big three didn't show up. Mm-hmm. None of them showed up. Ja was bad in the fourth. Jaren was bad in the fourth. Bane was bad in the fourth. When that happens, you're not going to win many basketball games. If one of those guys doesn't have 25 plus or more in a game, there's almost no way you're winning a game if you're the Memphis Grizzlies. So Ja, Bane, and Jaren have to step up against the Golden State Warriors. They have to play like their entire life is on the line. And if one of them doesn't show up, it's going to be difficult to beat them. I thought that Zach Edey was okay in the game against the Nuggets, but he did have a few moments of defensive lapse where you're just like, what are you doing, man? Like, there was one moment where Jamal Murray came off of a screen, and Zach Edey was right in front of him. And it was like at the free throw line, and Edey just let him shoot.
Yeah, you have
to get a hand
up. He didn't
put a hand up or step to him, and it's like those are the areas of improvement where during this offseason and next season, you've got to see from Zach Edey is he's got to step up on these guys. He's got to try and defend around the free throw line and to the perimeter. He's good around the rim, but you can't just let Jamal Murray take a free throw line jumper with the game on the line. I was watching. I was like, "What? Put a hand up! You're 7'4".
Here's part of me understands what you're saying, but part of me realizes that Zach Edey is probably never going to thrive in those situations.
He could put a hand up. That's all I'm asking.
I think that that's where you miss a guy like Brandon Clark the most.
100%.
Late in games. Closing with Zach Edey's not ideal by any stretch of the imagination. He's not switchable. He can't move his feet well enough. Brandon Clark being out is just so damn big, especially for moments like this when you get into those games where you're going to have to play half court, where there's going to be ball screens. They're going to try to get the switch and pick on Zach Edey. Having a guy like Brandon Clark being able to be as switchable as he has been in the past, it's just a massive, massive issue for them. But tomorrow night, going to San Fran, playing against the Warriors, how do you feel about tomorrow night's game? We know that since Jimmy Butler joined the Warriors, they are really good. They've been phenomenal. Defensively, they have thrived. Offensively, they've been a whole lot better. Feels like Steph Curry for a while there was on a different level. But I do like the fact this is a rematch of 2021, them playing into the playoffs. We'll see how it goes, but the confidence level cannot be high for anybody that's a Grizzlies fan, considering the way they've played against teams like the Warriors, teams that are good in the Western Conference, that have a winning record, that are ahead of them in the standings.
Yeah, it's again, I think that not having Brandon Clark in this one is going to be a huge factor. Not having Jalen Wells is going to be a huge factor in this one as well. If the big three all go nuts, they'll have a shot. If one of them has a bad game, it's going to be really hard. It's as simple as that for me. If one of those three guys doesn't show up, it's going to be tough. They all probably have to have like 22 or more for them to have a legitimate shot to win this basketball.
And I want to see, and Tomas Asalo, like visibly, I think the offense has looked better just because Ja Morant is thriving and Zach Edey's playing better. And you have more on-ball screens and you're able to get to more of the game that we've come to know and love from Ja Morant. But one thing that has been disappearing little by little since Tomas Asalo has taken over is more of those opportunities for Jaren Jackson Jr. and what he was able to get with Taylor Jenkins' offense, more ISO situations. He's one of the best ISO players in the NBA, definitely the best ISO player per the statistics for the Memphis Grizzlies. You need to see more of that. You need to implement more of that. And I listen, Tomas Asalo has been dealt a tough hand. Like you have a guy get fired with 9 games left in the season. You haven't had a chance to practice very much to implement the offense in its entirety. So you have to lean on things that you trust, which is Ja Morant ball screen. Here comes Zach Edey. They bumped it up from when Taylor Jenkins got fired from 13 to 30 on ball screens for Zach Edey per game. But I need to see a more wide variety of offense for them to compete late in games against the likes of teams like the Denver Nuggets, the likes of teams like the Minnesota Timberwolves, the likes of teams like the Warriors they're going to see tomorrow night. You have to be a little bit more – you have to have more variety to be able to win those games late, to be able to execute in the half court down the stretch. And I think that's something that I have seen missing from this team since Tomas Asalo took over. I understand he's relying on what's easy and what they can execute with limited practice time. but you're going to have to get Jaren Jackson more involved. He has not been the same player since Taylor Jenkins has been fired. I also don't think that a guy like Luke Kennard, even though he had a decent game against the Nuggets, has been the same player. Santi Aldama certainly has not been the same player offensively. We always talked about that melding of equal opportunity and ball screens and getting Ja going. I want to see that happen. They have a couple of nights. Let's see if they can get that going against the Warriors.
Right. It's just, I do think against the Nuggets, you saw that offense become a little bit stagnant because they were just running pick and rolls, and guys are kind of just standing around, and they get thrown the ball late in the shot clock, and they'd throw up a three. And that's kind of what ended up happening over and over again. But yeah, in the game against the Warriors, I would like to see Jaren go more downhill, get to the rim more, get to that mid-range little floater that he has more, because he took seven threes against the Nuggets, and he wasn't around the rim at all. Like, listen, I love Jaren. One rebound? Can't happen. You've got to have more than one. I understand that Zach Edey's bringing down 16 of them, but if you're playing 37 minutes in a basketball game, you should have more than one
and
rebound.
And you're 7 foot.
If you're as big as Jaren Jackson Jr. is. He's got to be around the rim more. He's got to be more of a presence on the inside. I think that's going to lead to success. It's going to get him more open threes as well. It's just when he's jacking up threes over and over and over again, he is a good three-point shooter, but he's taking away points, I feel like, because he is so good in the ISO. He is so good when he gets inside that free throw line. It almost feels like a guaranteed bucket when he puts up that little bit of that little floater. So I would definitely like to see that more against the Golden State Warriors.
The matchups that are locked in are as follows. 4-5 on both sides. You have in the Western Conference the Nuggets versus the Clippers. That should be a fun series. Pacers versus Bucks, I think, falls to 4-4 of the series that are already locked in, but that's not going to be a bad series by any stretch.
It'll be an exciting one. It'll be a good one.
The 3-6 matchups, I really love the one in the Western Conference. We'll get to it a little bit more later, my favorite matchup. Timberwolves-Lakers, the 3-6 in the Western Conference. Knicks-Pistons in the Eastern Conference.
I can't wait.
The 3-6 matchups are damn good. Damn good. Very, very fun. But the Grizzlies are either going to have, if they win one of these next two games, if they win the first one, you're either going to have the Rockets or the Thunder. You certainly don't want to see the Thunder. I'd rather them see the Rockets, but I think either matchup is pretty brutal, and I don't see those series going well in a seven-game series. Rockets are very physical. Thunder can give you that presence, but they're also deep as hell, and the Grizzlies have had their struggles with SGA so far this year. I do want to put one thing to bed, though, because there's been some discussion. I've talked about the GMification of fans and talking about picks and how the pick that they traded to get rid of Marcus Smart to the Wizards is a lottery-protected pick. And if they lose this first game to the Warriors, just bow out, lose the second game. First of all, there's going to be no mindset like that going on in that locker room. It's ridiculous. We're 4 or 5 years into this thing with this big three. They want to play as many playoff series, play as many meaningful games as possible to get those scars, build them up so they can eventually take care of a better championship window. But you need these scars. But also, I think more so than anything, when I've heard people talk about, bring that discussion up, are we really interested in having another lottery pick? Are we really interested in more young players? Because I'm at the point in the upward trajectory or the trajectory of this Grizzlies team, I want to see more signings in the offseason. I want to see trades. I want to see more aggression in that realm to bring in more veteran guys, guys that have been there, done that. I'm tired of the internal development, develop a guy that's 18 to 23 years old. I think you need to move past that as a franchise before you get the results that you ultimately want.
Yeah, we don't need another young player. I am always in favor of play.
I've been working with a nurse dietitian for the last 6 months, and it's been life-changing. I've lost weight, healed my relationship with food, and have way more energy. Working with a dietitian online to create a personalized nutrition plan was so easy thanks to Nourish. The best part? I pay $0 out of pocket because Nourish accepts hundreds of insurance plans. 94% of patients pay $0 out of pocket. Find your dietitian at usenourish.com. That's usenourish.com.
When you think about businesses that are selling through the roof like Aloe, Allbirds, or Skims, sure, you think about a great product, a cool brand, and brilliant marketing. But an often overlooked secret is actually the businesses behind the business, making selling and for shoppers buying simple. For millions of businesses, that business is Shopify. Nobody does selling better than Shopify, home of the number one checkout on the planet and the not-so-secret secret, with Shop Pay that boosts conversions up to 50%, meaning way less carts going abandoned and way more sales going. So if you're into growing your business, your commerce platform better be ready to sell whenever your customers are scrolling or strolling on the web, in your store, in their feed, and everywhere in between. Upgrade your business and get the same checkout experience as business powerhouses like Alo, Allbirds, and Skims. Sign up for your $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/odysseypodcast, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/odysseypodcast to upgrade your selling today. shopify.com/odysseypodcast.
At Designer Shoe Warehouse, we believe that shoes are an important part of, well,
everything. From first steps to first dates, from all-nighters to all-time personal bests.
From building pillow forts to building a life.
For all the big and small moments that make up your whole world, DSW is there. And we've got just the shoes. Find a shoe for every you from brands you love at brag-worthy prices at your DSW store or DSW.com.
Waiting for the best deals? Spring Black Friday savings are here. Shop early access now at Blinds.com and save big on new custom window treatments. At Blinds.com, shopping online for custom window treatments doesn't mean sacrificing on service, selection, or style. As the number one online retailer of custom window treatments, Blinds.com has hundreds of options to fit any decor and budget. Choose from stylish roller or bamboo shades, blackout options, and more. We even have motorized shades for your patio. DIY, or let our experts handle the heavy lifting. Blinds.com has you covered with free virtual consultations. We'll even send a pro to do the measure and install. Try before you buy with free samples delivered to your door. With over 25 million windows covered, every order's backed with Blinds.com's 100% satisfaction guarantee. Shop Blinds.com's Spring Black Friday Early Access now for up to 40% off with minimum purchase, plus a free measure. Save up to 40% at Blinds.com. Rules and restrictions may apply.
Anyone who loves playing baseball or softball knows that one of the first steps in that journey is breaking in your first glove. It's where your love of the game began. Where does your child's baseball or softball journey begin? Go to playball.org to get started. Major League Baseball trademarks used with permission.
Playoffs, if you can make it there. Yeah, I think it is a big thing, especially after the season that you had last year. And listen, both matchups would be tough. The Rockets would be tough. The Thunder would be even more difficult. But you never know what could happen in the playoffs. First game, one of their best players could go down, and all of a sudden, an opportunity opens up for the Memphis Grizzlies. And, I mean, we've literally seen it happen to the Grizzlies in a playoff series where Ja gets hurt or Steven Adams gets hurt, and then all of a sudden, the series can change in an instant. I do not want to miss the playoffs. I would like to beat the Warriors. I don't care if we play the Thunder. I don't necessarily care if we lose to the Thunder. I want to beat them for sure, but I would rather see the Grizzlies in the playoffs and them have a puncher's chance of making something happen than just being on the outside looking in.
One of the arguments I've heard is just like getting into, let's say they end up in the eighth spot, win the second game, lose the Warriors, win the second game, get into that 1-8 matchup against the Thunder. One of the arguments I've heard is how demoralizing would it be to get swept out of the playoffs or have a gentleman sweep by the Oklahoma City Thunder.
I think it's substantially
more demoralizing with where the Grizzlies have been and how far we are into this thing to miss the playoffs altogether. That's way more demoralizing for a team that is expected and has these expectations placed on them to always be in the playoffs, to always be in contention at this point in the year.
Yeah.
Like, that's substantially more demoralizing than getting swept by the Thunder. The Thunder are a good team. Whatever their matchup is going to be, it feels like they're going to have a chance to sweep that team. But I just don't want to see the Grizzlies miss the playoffs at this point in their window. It would not feel good. It would feel like a substantial step back, and it would make me wonder about the future. Now, going into the offseason, I've been sort of thinking about what the Grizzlies need to do. Obviously, you're going to lock up Jaren Jackson Jr. going into the future. We'll see if he makes All-NBA. That could be a five-year, $345 million deal. But their cap space isn't going to be great. You have a decision to make on Santi, a decision to make on Luke Kennard. You have all these young guys still locked up, Scottie Pippen Jr., G.G. Jackson, Vince Williams Jr., on these small deals. You think that they're going to be a part of your future. Obviously, the easy thing to say is, well, they could stay healthy. And Gigi and Vince Williams Jr. could be ready to go by next year. And they could have a full runway of 82 games to go make something happen. I still would love to see the Grizzlies maneuver a little bit in the offseason, more than that, bring in some outside help, because I think they need it in a big way.
Yeah.
Especially to help with their perimeter defense. They need a dog again. There's some guys out there that will be available. I don't know the avenues that they're going to have to go down to make that happen. Maybe there's a trade out there that we don't see right this second. I know they've had the mid-level exception for the better part of the last 2 years they've had it. They haven't used it. But I'd like to see them maneuver more than just saying, okay, let's run it back and hope we stay healthy.
They have to do something. They have to do something. Are a healthy Gigi and Vince going to help? Sure. But is that going to be enough? Probably not.
But again, you made that bet this offseason,
right,
and it didn't work out.
Right.
So are you going to just double down on that bet
no,
and hope it works
please
out?
Please do
I
not.
Think that's
no.
not. That is not the way to go forward.
No, it feels like a very, very important offseason for the Memphis Grizzlies. You have to go find somebody out there. You've got to find a wing player that can play defense. I do think that Jalen Wells, being another year older, is going to help you. But like you said, you can't just rely on these young players. You've got to go out there and find a veteran to try to put this thing together. And if they don't do that, I think that we're going to see a lot of the struggles that we've seen this season from the Grizzlies, because we can talk about coaching all that we want, but I think that all of us would be lying to each other if we said that we truly believe this roster is championship ready. I mean, even this season, we've been saying that we think that the ceiling for this team was the Western Conference Finals anyway, if they were fully healthy. This isn't a championship roster yet, so it is Zach Kleiman's job to go out there and make it a championship roster. You're going to have to make some tough decisions. There are some guys that are on this team this season that probably shouldn't be on this team next year, and you're going to have to decide who that's going to be.
Yeah. It's tough,
or
though.
You're going to have to let go of some of them to acquire someone.
It's tough, though, too, because when you look at value from a player asset standpoint, I don't know how much they have there, at least on team control. Like, you look at the big three, sure. Yes, Dez, Ja, and Jaren have value out there on the open market, but are you willing to break that up? How do you maneuver your way forward with maybe a little bit flexibility, less flexibility than you've had in the past?
It'll depend on who's available, too.
Yeah. For sure. If there's a big fish, I think people can read my tone here. If there's a big fish out there that you can think can put you over the top, I don't think you need to take everybody off the table, if that makes sense. But let's go ahead and grab a break on that note, because over the weekend we had some big news in college football, and it's sending shockwaves throughout the college football landscape, and it has to do with Tennessee quarterback Nico Iamaleava. We had some hints that he was going to hop in the transfer portal, that he wanted more money, and there was an NIL dispute. But it is official. Nico Iamaleava is leaving Tennessee. More on that next. Story coming out of Knoxville, where Nico Iamaleava is now in the transfer portal after 1 year starting for Josh Heupel in Tennessee. I do want to mention Ohio State is at the White House today after winning a national championship. And if you have not checked the, your Twitter, or if you haven't watched their visit, J.D. Vance fumbled the trophy completely. He broke it. It all fell down while he was trying to hoist it up in front of the podium. So that was fun. Also, Ohio State football did get their rings before they went to the White House, and they put out a post on their X account, Ohio State football, left no doubt, and then they showed the ring, and I want to get your opinion on this. They said that this was the greatest run in college football history. 2024 national champion Ohio State Buckeyes. Best run in college football history. And we've talked about it. Good run. Very good run. But it was the first time we've been in a 12-team college football playoff, so we're grading it on a different scale. And this was a team who lost two games during the regular season as well. So it's like, I don't know how to sit here and give them all of that credit. I don't want to go full college football history since 1900 and call this the best run of all time. I think it's a bridge too far for me. But that's what Ohio State put out there. I know that they're doing their PR. I know that they want to get people excited. And they're rolling out like the rings to show everybody. But greatest run in college football history. Let's calm down on that, right? Am I fair? Is that fair?
It's certainly one of. I don't know if it is the best moment, but their college football playoff run was absolutely
insane.
Great. I mean, Tennessee, Oregon, Texas, and Notre Dame
is
one hell of a run. I do wonder if once we get more of a sample size of the college football playoff, how we'll go back and look at it. But yeah, them having two losses during the regular season, one of which to their biggest rival,
right.
I do think needs
their biggest rival, who was 6-6
yeah,
this year.
That probably
you know?
Brings them back to earth a little bit. But overall, going 14-2 and having the run that they did, I think it is fair to say one of the best in college football history. To be honest, off the top of my head, I couldn't name you the best one in college football history, but it's certainly one of them.
Yeah, for sure. Now let's get to the story. Nico Amaleava, amid all of the talks about him wanting more NIL money, he wanted to up his deal from $2.5 million from Tennessee to nearly $4 million. Amid all that talk, he has decided to leave Tennessee. It was the day before the spring game. He didn't show up to practice. You have Jake Merklinger, their backup quarterback, saying he was surprised by it. The whole quarterback room was surprised by it. They had dinner the night before. He missed practice, and he missed practice the next day. So it was a surprise to everybody involved. But we did have some answers over the weekend about him getting into the transfer portal ultimately, what teams are going to be tied to him. I'll get to that in a second. And Josh Heupel, the head coach for Tennessee, spoke on it as well. Here's what he had to say. So that was Josh Heupel talking about the departure of his quarterback, former five-star Nico Amaleava. He actually becomes, of the top eight quarterbacks, according to 247 in the 2023 class, he becomes the seventh quarterback in that top eight to eventually get into the transfer portal. The only guy that has stayed at the school that he signed with is Arch Manning, who is the number one recruit in that class, and he's going to be the starter for Texas. He's at the top of all the Heisman odds going in to next season. But this was not just Tennessee talking about it. We had other coaches around the country giving their two cents. Let's go out to Miami and hear from Mario Cristobal. So Josh Heupel says no one's bigger than the team. Mario Cristobal, in response to this whole thing, says that if they want to play hold out, they can play get out as well. So messages are being sent across the country about guys that are hoping to do this. Now, I do think Mario Cristobal, it's a lot easier said than done what he's saying. If you do have a guy like Cam Ward, if Cam Ward wanted to hold out during the college, you know, before the college football playoff, if they ended up making the college football playoff, I think he would have had a different tone considering where his team was placed last year. But that's beyond the point. I want to give my overarching take about Nico Amaleava and this whole situation before I get into the particulars. I think it's quite frankly ridiculous. I understand people trying to be on the side of the player. The player has been treated wrong for years and years and years. They haven't been able to make money off themselves. They finally do, and everybody's tabbing this guy as selfish. So there's this tendency for the general media, for the national media, to come to the defense of Nico Amaleava. I'm not going to do that, though, because I think this is a lesson for a guy like Nico Amaleava and guys that may follow in his footsteps. You have to produce. You do. He got money up front. He got $2.2 million to $2.5 million. And if I'm looking at that amount of money versus the actual production he put on the field, especially in meaningful games, it does not match up. I don't even think he lived up to that contract. So to ask for $1 to $1.5 million more dollars on top of that, he didn't have the negotiating or bargaining power to make that happen in any walk of life, in any industry. If I want to get back to the negotiating table and make more money than my previous contract, had, I have to have production. I have to have reasons. I have to have stats to back up why I deserve $1.5 million more dollars. Whether I'm a radio host or accountant or whatever, a football player, NFL player, NBA player, whatever I do, I have to have a reason. I have to have negotiating power to say I want more money. And if you look at Nico Amaleava, he didn't have that.
College holds a mythic place in American culture, but there are stories you won't hear on the campus tours.
The higher-ups are concerned about one thing, and that is avoiding scandal.
I'm Margot Gray. On the new podcast, Campus Files, we cover everything from rigged admissions to the drama of Greek life and student protests. Listen to and follow Campus Files, an Odyssey original podcast, available now on the free Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.
That was a very defensive-oriented Tennessee team with Josh Heupel as the head coach, a known offensive guy. Nico Amleava really struggled in some of the biggest games of the year, including that first-round matchup against Ohio State where he had 31 pass attempts, only had 104 yards. So that's where I'm at with this. In the grand scheme of things, Nico Amleava, he had a little bit too much dip on his chip. He thought he was worth more than he was. I understand he was probably looking behind him, and it's like, okay, who else is going to come in here and replace the production that I'm going to leave behind? And maybe that's why he thought he deserved more money. But in the end of the day, he did not have the statistics. He did not have the production to sit up there and demand $1.5 million more than he made a year ago in a season where I was just not impressed. You have to do more than that to be able to give that big of an ask to a university or any industry, anybody, any boss you have. So that's where I stand mostly.
Yeah, I think it's ridiculous that he's leaving. I mean, I know I'm biased because I'm a Tennessee football fan, but it's absolutely insane that he's leaving. You're not going to really find a better chance when you're making millions of dollars at one of the biggest programs in the country. Like, that's just crazy. I think that it highlights two things, though. NIL regulations are absolutely needed.
Sure.
We are getting to the point where this is crazy. And the bad advice that these kids are receiving, it sounds like his family has been really on him to try to make more money, and that has to stop. There's got to be some sort of safety rails added to this thing for not only the schools but also the players to prevent them from hurting themselves. Because it sounds like he is going to go from making $2.5 million and something like that at Tennessee to, is he going to get that now on the open market wherever he goes? Is that actually going to be a thing? If he had a good season at Tennessee, he probably would have made some more money. But do we have any guarantees in the future that he is going to be able to reach the same amount that he was making at Tennessee? I do not understand the decision. I think that him leaving when he did is also a very, very bad look. You've got to make this decision a lot earlier. Making it the day before the day of the spring game, I just think is a horrific look. And listen, I think that Nico is getting some terrible, terrible advice. I understand that he is still a kid, but at the same time, you do have decision-making power when you are still the player. And it's just, I cannot believe this is happening. It's crazy.
Yeah, and Josh Pate from the Josh Pate College Football Show on 247 and CBS Sports actually mentioned that he was trying to negotiate before they even played a playoff game, before they played Ohio State, which is insane to me. Before games like that, it just seems kind of wrong. It's wrong to do that at that moment. It's wrong to do that. I think there is a sense of entitlement that is going through a lot of these high-ranking recruits, and I think it's a problem going forward. And if you were listening on Friday, David Cobb and I broke this down. He was actually in Knoxville doing some things. He wasn't actually covering the football team and covering the Nico Amleava saga. He was just there. But I asked him, is there anybody else in the country that would be willing to foot that bill? $4 million plus for Nico Amleava for one particular season. And if you've sort of read up on the situation, look at the reports of who he's tied to, I don't think any of those schools are going to be able to do it. The three schools that I've seen him tied to the most are North Carolina with Bill Belichick. I don't think Bill Belichick in year one is going to want to cough up $4 million for Nico Amleava. That's a lot of their budget. Tulane, I know TJ Finley had the stolen car thing, and they're probably trying to figure out the quarterback situation. Tulane doesn't have $4 million. They do well in the AAC, just like Memphis does. They don't have $4 million to throw at Nico Amleava. And then UCLA, I think that's the most likely outcome where you could get a fair amount of money, maybe get a bump in pay from the $2.5 million you're getting to Tennessee, but even that's a stretch. I don't know if UCLA, considering the way their football program has operated lately, is going to be wanting to foot a bill for $4 million for the production that Nico Amleava had at Tennessee. So it seems like, to your point, really bad advice from parental figures and from agents behind the scenes. But it does get to the point. I don't want people to misconstrue my message today for me saying that I'm worried about NIL. I'm not worried about NIL being the downfall of college football. I think that's way too frequently used as a crutch by people that see the way things are going. And fans that lose a guy like Nico Amleava and have to find another quarterback this late in the calendar. I think it's a crutch. What I'm worried about is the lack of structure. I mean, it's simple, and we've talked about it on multiple occasions, but there has to be at some point an understanding of, you know, contracts, how we're going to work through them, when you can come back to the negotiating table. Don't do it right while you're in the middle of a season about to go to the college football playoff like it's being reported Nico Amleava did. It's just the lack of structure more than anything. I'm not worried about the money they're getting. They can get astronomical figures. It doesn't change my opinion on the lack of structure that we have in college football, college athletics in general.
I think that it's mind-boggling that he would leave a place like Tennessee when he's making the amount that he would make. And we got to be honest. Like, Tennessee's done a lot for Nico. A lot for Nico. They went to war with the NCAA when they were thinking about maybe making him ineligible. They sued the NCAA for him. They gave him, at the time, the largest NIL deal.
Yes.
And he is still leaving that school because he thinks he can make more money somewhere else. It's just, it is very, very frustrating. Now, at the same time, I kind of love that Heupel and Tennessee were like, all right, dude, bye.
Yeah, no. Yeah.
We're over this. You keep asking for more money. You haven't played up to the level that you should be making the amount that you have, and now you want more before the production is there, before the results are there. Bye. Go find it somewhere else. And a very fun wrinkle to the story, and it hasn't been confirmed yet, but it has been rumored that Dan Lanning was the one that let Josh Heupel know that Nico was sniffing around. And if that's so, God, I just love Dan Lanning. It makes my love for Dan Lanning grow even more if that is actually the case.
Yeah, we don't have that confirmed.
It's not confirmed, but it's been rumored.
That's the rumor out there. But listen, eventually we know where this needs to get. I don't know what the timing is going to be on it, but you need a collective bargaining agreement at this point with the astronomical figures that are being thrown around the country. You need to have contracts that are a little bit more set in stone at this moment. Guys can just leave on a whim for more money whenever they can. It's not like people try to compare it to the NFL. It's clearly not the NFL. At least with the NFL, you have a collective bargaining agreement and contracts that tie you to a certain franchise for a certain amount of years. Right now, these are one-year renewable contracts that you can leave on a whim. I mean, the Caden Proctor thing, I know Nico Amleava is the face of this whole thing right now, but like, look at Caden Proctor last offseason amid the coaching switch from Nick Saban to Kalen DeBoer. Their left tackle decides to go to Iowa, takes up a little bit of money, comes back to Alabama before even playing in a spring practice, doing any of that. It's just too much movement, not enough structure, and it's so hard to understand why we can't get any of these things under control. I understand there's going to be a lot more court cases. We still need the house settlement to come through. But situations like this are going to be the downfall of college football because of the lack of structure. Not the money being thrown around, not selfishness, not all of that. It's the lack of structure. I think people need to understand that. There's just too much. I think there's too many people discussing NIL as the problem. NIL is not the inherent problem.
Right.
It's the lack of understanding about NIL and how we're throwing around these dollar figures in the contracts.
It's the Wild Wild West. We've been saying it for 2.5 years now. It's the Wild Wild West. There has to be some sort of structure. And maybe this happening at such a large scale to a place like Tennessee causes that structure to come into place a little bit more. It might. Probably not.
It might. I mean, it highlights. It's just another example of the lack of structure.
Well, it's just.
But again, this is something that needs to get figured out sooner rather than later, and I don't know where we're going to get those answers from. The NCAA is toothless. Congress takes too long to act. It doesn't feel like the conferences are on the same page in regards to how much money needs to be thrown out there and how contracts need to be, and if they want them to be employees ultimately and have a collective bargaining agreement. So there's no answer in sight right this second. But in the end of the day, the lack of structure is really hurting the product, ultimately. It's hurting programs. It's hurting universities. It's hurting the other players on that Tennessee roster. They're going to have to figure out, okay, can we rally behind Jake Merklinger, or they're going to go find somebody else for $2.5 million on the open market, which they probably can because Josh Heupel's offense is very, very conducive to quarterback success. I think they're going to be able to find somebody out there, but it's just – it is way, way too much to keep up with, and I don't know where this ends. I don't know what year, if it's 5 or 10 years, where we ultimately get a handle on this thing, but it's not now, and that's the frustrating part of the whole thing. And I know that Vols fans feel that today. Now let's go ahead and grab a break on that note, and we'll get to more of this coming up next with David Cobb. He covers college football for CBS Sports. He's been following this story very closely, so we'll get his take on the whole thing.